time now for the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Traffic was, of course, lighter than usual this morning. There's no mail delivery. The kids are back home from school to mark the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. It was more than 40 years ago in the summer of 1960 when King took microphones at the Lincoln Memorial and delivered his famous I Haven't a Dream speech. Today in the Philadelphia Inquirer, Rob McCord argues that in spite of the progress of the past 40 years, racial bias and segregation are alive and well, and he sees it firsthand. Rob McCord is white. His wife, Lee Jackson, is African-American. They both join us today from a studio at Audio Post in Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. Rob and Lee, nice to talk to you and nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And, of course, we invite our listeners to join the conversation. After 4 decades after Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, is America still as segregated? Is your life as segregated as before? 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And, Rob, you wrote in the op-ed, and I should mention we have a link to it at the Talk of the Nation page at npr.org. But you wrote that while there's been progress, we still live in what you describe as voluntary segregation.
Yes, and I would want to sort of argue a bit with the edginess of the tone here. I think there are a lot of people of very good will who are not racist, who nevertheless find themselves in an entirely segregated lifestyle. If they just look around at their business meetings, at their gymnasiums, at what they do in their pastimes, in the case of a lot of white folks, it's 100% white. And it's sad for everybody.
Mm. That person that you describe is in a way you.
In a way, me. In other words, my great blessing is that I married well, and my wife integrates my life on a daily basis, and it's spectacular. But a lot of the rest of the day is lily white, and it saddens me. And to the extent that it gets integrated almost without exception, it's very stimulating and helpful.
And Lee, I have to ask you, in his op-ed piece, Rob writes about incidents that happened to you in your neighborhood that lead us to think that expectations, people's expectations, haven't really changed a lot.
Well, I think that is probably true sometimes. I mean, I think for the most part, people are very generous, very open-hearted, and frankly, the reason that these are such memorable incidents for me is because they are relatively rare. One of the things I was a little concerned about with this op-ed is that it was more full of complaint than I actually feel.
And just to clarify for your readers who haven't read the piece, I mean, we live in a very affluent neighborhood, and a wealthy neighbor basically was annoyed by the movement of our mailbox, which was required by law.
It was moving into the street.
Yeah, and he bumped it. He bumped it with his car mirror, and he marches up to the door, knocks on the door, and Lee, who's obviously well-spoken, answers the door and says, "Hello," and he says, "Yes, may I speak to the lady of the house?" Obviously implying that Lee, being an African-American, couldn't own this large house in Philadelphia's main line. And she runs into that kind of thing quite often. And it saddens us. That's usually our main reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, we just sat back and said, what can we do about this? It's one thing to engage in these arguments about how Justice Kennedy is going to argue and what's going on in our institutions in which there's often been fantastic progress, like the military, like Condi Rice, as wrongheaded as she may be on policy. She's a cool example in our view. But as individuals, are we doing enough to pursue integration that I think people really want?
Absolutely. And I have to say, as an African American, I think African Americans have wanted integration, and that at some point those who are in the majority, including my husband, have to think about this as well. And I think that's the piece that's been missing from a lot of discussion about integration.
On the opinion, just on the opinion page today, we're speaking with Rob McCord and Lee Jackson, husband and wife. Rob wrote an opinion piece in yesterday's Philadelphia Inquirer. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I didn't mean to cut you off. Please go ahead.
Oh, there was a very interesting article by Orlando Patterson. I believe he's an African-American sociologist from Harvard. And he also points out that African-Americans often are choosing to segregate, to live in communities with more than 40% African-Americans. In part, I think, because they sometimes face people who look at them like they don't belong there. People who don't mean harm, but they're just surprised in lily-white neighborhoods to run into African-Americans. But what's interesting about Orlando Patterson's argument is he said, you still need to move into those neighborhoods for the good of your economic future and your kids' education. And I just think being pro-integration and reaching out in every way as individuals that we possibly can, inviting people to parties, encouraging African-American friends to look at houses that are for sale in your neighborhood, integrating all of the clubs and activities you're involved in, and thinking about it consciously does make a difference. It's just like fitness. If you don't focus on it, it won't get done.
And it's not going to get done if you only think about it one day of the year, too.
Absolutely.
Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Lisa. Lisa's with us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi. I live in a suburb of Cleveland, and I grew up, I am white. I grew up in a primarily white area. And my husband and I made the choice to live in a diverse place and have brought our children up in that way to really encourage the integration that you're talking about. And what was surprising to us is that our daughter and son didn't know anything about them being different from anybody else until they got to school and were taught Black history. And it was curious to us that for them, their experience was that they were being taught that other people were different. They still don't really understand what Black skin is. And so I guess it's conscious on our part, but how can it be conscious in terms of education so that it's not called out as what's different? It can be, called out more positively.
I wonder if either of you have a response to that.
I do. I think that it's generally not so great to encourage people to study obsessively their own ethnic background, but instead to say that it's important to learn about each other's histories. I mean, one of our closest friends is Dr. Raza Bakari and his wife, Sabina. They're moderate Muslims. We just happen to get to know each other well. It was so spectacular for us to start to get to know them, and then in the wake of this Iraq fiasco and so forth, to get educated about them by them as moderate Muslims. And I think there's a kind of not very constructive, old-fashioned way of teaching about ethnic issues. And I know ethnic identity can be good and highly compatible with integration, but I think that there's a woodenness to a lot of what I see as ethnic pride days in the schools I've visited.
But, there's another side to that, really, which is that without that, without those ethnic pride days or a conscious effort to teach Black history or Native American history or whatever, it might not be included. And maybe this is part of a process in which these things are brought in awkwardly, perhaps, but brought in nonetheless into the curriculum. And at some point, they'll be integrated. They'll be integrated into the curriculum.
You can see my wife is great. You know what I mean? I'm persuaded. But I also would just add, wouldn't it be spectacular if the majority of people who studied Native American Indians were white people, and that if a heck of a lot of the people who studied African American history happened to be white? I think that could do a lot of good, and I'm just not sure how to prompt that.
Right. That's the big question.
Lisa, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And I raise that question. You do come up with suggestions of you've mentioned a few of them. Go out of way to befriend a young African-American. Look for ways to help promote the careers of promising people of color. Notice when there are no not whites in a celebration you share. Think consciously about what you could do better to integrate your own parties or clubs. And on one level, Rob, you're certainly talking about intimate personal choices that people make every day. On the other hand, I guess, do you leave yourself vulnerable to being charged with naivete?
I do leave myself vulnerable to that. And I think that most good is done by unrealistic people who think that they're going to make changes, darn it, even though the odds are against them. And I think that that's useful. I also would say that Small intimacies, small friendships. I'm a venture capitalist. I am just amazed by how much of life is who you know, not just what you know. And the familiarity of breaking bread with somebody, of having a drink with somebody, really matters. We are carbon-based life forms, and it doesn't matter how many emails we send to each other. If we meet each other, spend time with each other, and have informal conversations, we will get more good done with each other.
Rob McCord and Lee Jackson joined us from Philadelphia. Rob's op-ed appeared in today's Philadelphia Inquirer. Thanks to you both. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.